To feed our future, we will need to produce more food from fewer natural resources. Some point to the technology of the nano and say salvation is on the way. And so today we pause to ask, can nanotechnology feed our future?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 637th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Lisbon who are tuned in as we stream along on the radio page at metrofarm.com. Well, wherever you are and wherever you are, wherever you're doing, we are glad to have you aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of Red Hot News Talk. Also with us today, we have engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hello.
Producer Carol Stafford.
Hello there.
And Parmley Taff.
Hello.
Folks, it is kind of an inevitability, barring some kind of calamity, the future will consist of ever more people living in ever smaller spaces. In the past, technology has allowed for an ever-increasing population. You know, we've had such things as the Green Revolution and whatnot that have allowed us to increase our population base, and so that's exactly what we have done and will continue to do because that's how we build our world. But will technology continue to do so in the future? Some look to the technology of the nano and say salvation is on the way, and so today we ask, will nanotechnology provide us the technology we need to feed our future? Here to help us dig for an answer today, we have Shane Journay, who is a CEO of Nanotechnology Toxicology Consulting and Training. Did I get that right, Shane?
That's correct, Michael.
Okay, good. Thanks for joining us today. You're up in Canada, right?
Correct. Nova Scotia on the East Coast.
East Coast to West Coast today. So tell us a little bit about Nanotechnology Toxicology Consulting and Training.
All right. Well, our company was formulated here a couple years ago because of the enormous demand and some of the unknowns associated with the possible human environmental health effects of nanotechnology. Mm-hmm. So we provide curriculum, training, and services to a wide range of industries, such as the food industry.
Good.
Who are trying to figure out what to do with these nanoparticles.
So we always like to ask who pays the way. So in your case, it would be the people who consult with you about the use of nanotechnology. Specifically, you focus on the toxicological aspects of the technology, right?
Correct. And I mean, it's a two-sided a coin. You know, by learning where the toxicity comes from, we can improve the safety and the health side of it as well. So it's really troubleshooting and figuring out what the unknowns are around the use of these materials.
Well, good. Happy to have you aboard today. So let's start with some real basic stuff, like what on earth is a nano and how did it get a technology named after it?
Right. Well, nanoparticles, nano comes from the Greek word dwarf, which is very, very small.
How small is a nano?
Well, there's two examples we can give. One would be a human hair ranges from about 50 to 75,000 nanometers in diameter.
Wow.
A nanoparticle, in terms of one that's engineered for the purposes of food technology or cosmetics or sunscreens, can be down under 100 nanometers. So it's smaller than we can see without a pretty amazing microscope. In terms of relative sizes, there's an expert in the U.S. has once described it as if you take all the sugars and proteins in a Twinkie, those components are, you know, smaller than the Twinkie on the same scale as that Twinkie is to the moon.
Oof.
So it's quite an expanse, but now we can work at that level.
So when we first hear of nanotechnology and the size of a nano, we, of course, scratch our head and think, how on earth is it possible to work in that world that is so small that you have to use an electron microscope to see it?
Correct. And that kind of comes back to your question about where did nanotechnology come from? And a lot of it, it's really just the application of nanoscience. So as, you know, nanoscale physics, chemistry, and biology has emerged, we've had a better understanding of how matter behaves at the nanoscale. And that's really what's driving nanotech, because we can really understand what properties we're conferring to this chemistry now.
Well, when we talk about nanotechnology, it's really the use of particles, right? The development of nanoparticles that you use to build things with, correct?
Correct.
What are the particles like? I mean, they're too small to see, but what are they?
Well, they can be anything you could imagine. They're really studying, you know, even if you just take gold and reduce it to a nanoscale, its properties change. Different color, it's more reactive.
Let's back up a little bit.
Sure.
When you take a regular substance like gold,
yeah,
which has physical properties, it's inert, it's solid, right?
Yeah.
And then when you reduce that to the size of nano, into the realm of nano, the properties change. The physical physical properties change. So, for example, a nano chunk of gold could be liquid, and it could be a catalyst.
Well, it could be a better catalyst than larger gold. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
So then the process, it's the whole thing changes. Everything changes.
Right. And
it's kind of like Alice through the Looking Glass, right?
Yeah, and that's where the problem is. Even from, you know, if you look at a regulatory standpoint, you know, people are using nano gold, but if its properties are different, is it still gold? You know, if somebody picks up a bottle of this off the shelf, it's still gold technically, but it behaves differently on the nanoscale. And that's it's fascinating for its applications, but it's also troublesome for for all the regulation that goes with some of these new chemicals.
Right. Oh, okay. So let's take a chunk of gold and reduce it into the nano realm. How do you do that? I mean, you have a golden eagle, $20 piece or something, and you reduce it to a nano particle. How do you do that?
Well, there's a lot of this is chemical engineering. Some of it's brute strength. So there's
brute strength.
Yes. There's two ways to produce nanomaterials. One would be called a top-down process, where you take larger size material and you whittle it down to the nanoscale. Now, gold, you can synthesize gold in a very... There's papers that come out every day on a new way to make nano gold. An easier example would be with carbon. So when they determined how to make carbon nanotubes, they were essentially firing lasers at large carbon and seeing what the products produced. And what they came up with were these novel nanoscale carbon structures with interesting properties.
So they just keep chopping things in half until they got to the nanoscale.
Right. And that was sort of the early nanotech. So now they're doing it differently with things like changing chemistry and temperature and catalysts to produce these in a more controlled manner. So what's really exciting about nanotech, though, is because we can see these things so small and come up with new ways to produce them, is the bottom-up approach, where we can now piece together molecules and atoms to get to a certain structure, less than 100 nanometers. So you can come at it from two angles.
From the top down or the bottom up.
Correct.
And this is the technology, or nanotechnology.
Absolutely.
Now, is nanotechnology something of the future, or is it something of today?
Well, it's a commonly held myth that it's futuristic. When our group, when I began studying this field, when it really took off, I guess in 2005, there were only maybe 100 or 200 products claiming nanotechnology in them. Now there's over 800. And it is here now in its most modest forms, and the more advanced forms of nanotechnology are just around the corner.
And what would the advanced forms be? How would they be different than the elemental ones we have today?
Okay, so we talked about gold, and another example would be silver. If you reduce the size down, it's still gold, but you make it less than 100 nanometers, and it just passively has new properties. Well, the next wave is now piecing together gold nanoparticles with other particles and other chemicals such that they have activity. And
ooh.
So they're called active nanomaterials. They can actually perform functions. And I guess the biggest area for that right now would be things like drug delivery for cancer, but also for sensing bacteria in food products, for example.
Okay. Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking about nanotechnology and our food chain. We have Dr. Shane Journay, who is the CEO of Nanotechnology Toxicology Consulting and Training up in Nova Scotia. Boy, I bet the weather's beautiful up there this time of year.
It's getting there. It's a little rainy here today, but we've had a good week.
So everything you wanted to know about nanotechnology, but we're not too afraid to ask, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, can little things do big things? Can something as small as a nano do such something so big as to feed a world? Well, that's the question of the day. This is the Food Chain. I am Michael Olson. We've got Dr. Shane Journay, who is a CEO of Nanotechnology Toxicology Consulting and Training up in Nova Scotia, but serving the world of nanotechnology, which is a worldwide industry now, is it not, Shane? Oops, I guess I have to press your button here. Silly me. There you go.
It's so, a huge investment. But
say that again, please.
Yeah, sorry, there was a little bit of static. Yeah, there's the big players in the world are, you know, all the major countries that you can think of. In the U.S., it all started with the National Nanotechnology Initiative from the Clinton administration in 2000.
So this is really relatively new stuff then, 2000.
Yeah, now if you just look at nanoparticles, there's nanoparticles in ocean spray and volcanic ash and forest fires. But in terms of really controlling it for commercial purposes, we haven't even hit the most linear, I guess, aspect of the industry yet. But we're talking about a $1 trillion industry projected by 2015, and it's already in the millions and millions now.
So, and it is a big note. You mentioned the fact that there are 800 commercial products on the market using nanotechnology of some kind or another. Could you lay some of them out for us so we get an idea of what's going on?
Sure. So one way to, I guess, consider nanotech is it's really applied chemistry at the most cutting edge or small scale. So when you think of the possibilities of that, it's in or will be in almost everything we can imagine. There are really no industries that aren't looking at this.
Why are they looking at it?
Well, some would say it's a value-added technology.
Mm-hmm.
We can come up with some examples. Some of them are purely for marketing purposes. So, you know, shinier tire spray, sunscreens that we put on our skin that don't leave the creamy film left over, cosmetics. You know, you can achieve new colors and applications to the skin. Paint that goes on your back deck that is weather customized, so it binds to the wood on your back deck more than non-nano paint, for example. These are some of the value-added properties that are at least exposed.
So when you take something big and reduce it to the nano, you change its physical properties, and in doing so, you introduce a whole new world of possibilities to everything, then, don't you?
Absolutely, and that's what makes makes it so exciting for, at least from an industrial perspective.
Well, okay. What about food now?
Well, food is no different. I mean, we look at food processing and food production and, well, even food safety. It's applied chemistry, biology, and physics. And, you know, so we talked about the gold particles earlier. Silver is another very modest example. If you take larger size silver, so say 1,000 nanometers or a micron, you reduce it to a smaller size. We've had silver around for years and years and years, and it's antimicrobial. We've known that. You reduce it to nanosilver, its antimicrobial properties are enhanced. So silver is...
Oh, really? It becomes even more antimicrobial then?
Right. So for a given dose, it would actually kill off more bacteria.
Wow.
And so this is being exploited for everything from antimicrobial sports socks to packaging in food that we that we'll be consuming.
Give us an example. For example, let's say lettuce grown here in California and put in bags and shipped to the East Coast. We've had trouble with E. coli 015787. So do you see an application for something like that?
Yes, and I'm not a microbiologist, but it'll depend what type of bacteria you're trying to kill off.
Mm-hmm.
But think more along the lines of, you know, things that can spoil, like canned products or potato chips. I don't see why vegetables would be any different. Where you can, so these particles are very reactive. If you coat the insides of these bags of food, you have a more chance of killing off any bacteria that might be there. Now, as a next step, a futuristic application, what's in development right now would be packaging that changes color once it senses a bacteria within the food as a
wow.
safety measure. Yeah.
So, well, that would be a huge one then, for example, the lettuce we're talking about. You know, if it is contaminated with E. coli bacteria, then the packaging would sense that. It's almost like a flash of warning light said, don't buy this package, right?
Absolutely, and maybe even before it even gets to the consumer. So, you know, nanotech has enormous applications for food safety. Now, we talk about the coatings that these packages might come in. The flip side of this is, one of the concerns to the consumer would be, do these particles or nanomaterials that are coating these food packages, do they migrate off the packaging into the food and into the consumer? That's something that's really wide open from a research perspective right now.
So I guess it's truly a whole new world of opportunity.
Yes.
And there seem almost no limits to what this technology can provide in terms of, I don't know, feeding the future.
I would agree. Yes, there's, you know, there's two sides of it, you know, where there's the other side of food nanotechnology would be supplementing food with nutrients. So
right.
The companies that have, nutraceuticals, for example, is one of the big areas for nanotech right now. Those companies claim that the supplements that they put in have increased bioavailability to people, almost like vitamin supplements. But if you have nanovitamins, apparently they're claiming that the uptake is greater. So these are things that still need to be sorted out. I'm not familiar with the exact data.
So give us an example of the supplementation. Let's see, we're taking vitamin C pills or something like that. And you're suggesting that if you use nanoparticles to increase the availability, you get much more.
Right. Now, vitamin C might not be the best example because it's sort of a water-soluble acid, if you will. But, you know, people have been drinking things like colloidal gold for years.
Right.
And so what they're saying is take a mineral, for example, like magnesium or calcium supplements. They're saying, so nano calcium, you'd have an increased uptake and enhanced antioxidant properties, for example. And the reason that is, when it enters the stomach and the intestines, they're claiming that the uptake is greater because the particle size is smaller.
Mm-hmm.
That's only one side of the story, because there's also chemical factors.
Which makes sense, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So then, that's one side of the story. There's great hope here that nanotechnology can increase the amount of food available to a growing population in the world simply by making it more available and increasing its safety. There's a lot of angles there that are provided opportunity with nanotechnology. But it seems like everything comes with a cost, right?
Correct.
And when we come back from this break, I'd like to talk with you about the costs involved in nanotechnology and who's going to be superintending all of this as well. Folks, this is The Food Chain. I am Michael Olson, your host for the morning, and we're with Shane Journay, who is the PhD CEO of Nanotechnology Toxicology Consulting and Training up there in Nova Scotia. His company helps other companies come to grips with nanotechnology because there's great promise and also probably some great dangers there that we all need to be aware of and watch out for. So if you have any questions about nanotechnology, here's a great opportunity to ask a man who knows all about it, Dr. Shane Journay. So pick up your phone and give us a ring. We're at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Well, if something can do so much good, can it also be used to do some bad? We're talking, of course, about nanoparticles with Dr. Shane Journay, who is the CEO of Nanotechnology Toxicology Consulting and Training. And his company helps people come to grips with nanotechnology and its use and its promises. And there appears to be a lot of promise in nanotechnology. It appears to be that this is something that can do just about everything, or be used to do just about everything. And, you know, we've talked a lot about the good that can become of it. And a caller just picked up a fuzzy cell phone call and called in and wanted to know about using it as a weapon. Shane, can something that could be used to do so much good also be used to do bad?
Like any technology, it's certainly possible. I remember one of my early workshops when this field just broke years ago, there were some folks from the military there, and I, you know, being early into the field, and well, everybody was at that point, I wasn't sure why they were using it, and I asked them why they're interested in nanotech. The first answer was bombs. So if we're playing with chemistry and increased reactivity and dispersion, absolutely, there's military application here.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, on the flip side, you know, they're looking at it for defense against biowarfare and these sorts of things.
Right.
So it could be a protective or a weaponized use as well.
That's what I was wondering about, the possibility of it, using it to weaponize something.
Yeah.
You know, taking something as toxic as anthrax and making it more available or whatever, you know. So I guess, you know, there's a science fiction element here that could be used to take you just about anywhere you want to go, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, well, you help companies come to grips with nanotechnology. And I suspect that they see the possibilities and just go headlong into a project, right? But there are some things that should be considered, and they are.
The list is very long. I'm not a lawyer, but liability with these particles is potentially very large. So we're producing this many types of nanomaterials with varying chemistries at the rate we are, and the quantities that are being produced now and in the future. Some of them will pose a hazard, absolutely, whether it's an occupational hazard, hopefully not to the consumer and to the environment. These things must be taken into account.
Well, can you give us an example?
Okay, well, there's two ways to consider possible exposure to two nanomaterials. One would be a company that is producing large batches of nanomaterials that they're shipping off for industrial processes, like mm-hmm. the chemical industry, for example. Somebody will be handling, packaging, shipping, and receiving those particles. If there's a spill, if the particles become airborne, they can be breathed in. If they land on the skin, they can cause problems. So that's one end of it. Now, a lot of people say, well, what if they're coating your back deck with nanoparticles, you know, that's in paint, for example?
Right.
Well, what happens to that paint when it wears off? Do the nanomaterials stay in that paint? Do they leach into the water, to the soil? Are they taken up into plants, foodstuffs?
Do little kids eat the paint?
Little kids eat the paint, absolutely.
What happens to the little kids that eat the paint and so on? So there's...
Yeah.
And have we come to grips with these issues at all?
It's still very, very early. You know, if you follow the news, the FDA, the EPA, Health Canada, the NIOSH in your country as well, are all starting to work on this. One of the problems is, though, that the materials are being produced at such a rate, we can't do toxicity testing on all of the materials. It's too complex. and all of the regulations...
Well, wait a minute. How would you do a toxicology test on something that you don't even really understand its properties anymore? The properties change from... you don't even know what the properties are, do you?
Well, this is one of the weaknesses in some of the early research was that, you know, you'd have sort of people that are very strong in the chemistry side. They would know all the properties. But they wouldn't know how those properties affect, say, a mouse or a rat or a cell line. But then we have the toxicologists who were throwing nanomaterials into these mice or into these cell lines, but didn't know about the properties. And that's why it's given birth to sort of this whole new branch of toxicology, because you have to know both sides. So really, where you're correct, Michael, in that where the future of this is going is trying to attribute these nanotechnology properties, these new properties, to what responses they may or may not cause in the body.
Phew.
Yeah.
Okay, and companies have to come to grips with this right away because they, of course, are responsible for what happens with their with what happens to their products and what happens with when people react with those products. So there's an incredible product liability question on the table. And really no answers, are there?
Not from a government perspective. As you said earlier, our company helps people weed through the science and identify the hazards and where this is going to be relevant to their company. You know, they've often been asked by their end clients, well, what about the environmental health and safety of these materials? And they usually just pass it along, say, well, that's somebody else's job. You know, I should also mention that our group works with government agencies too, which will be, you know, combing through the data submitted by companies with nanomaterials in their products.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also requiring guidance in terms of what to look for.
Well, you know, in the drug industry, there's an incredible process that companies must go through to have their drugs approved. Is there anything like this for nanotechnology?
We're at a turning point in nanotoxicology right now, really all over the world, particularly in the U.S. and Canada, where there's legislation coming over the next year that will really be a turning point for those that are commercializing these products. So is there a formal body in place specific to nanotechnology? No. There have been calls for that, actually, recently by people in the U.S. and Canada saying, this nanotech stuff is moving so fast and so complex, we almost need an agency just to oversee, as you said, the food and drug aspects, the environmental aspects, to deal with this. So really what they're trying to decide is, do traditional laws and reporting practices work for nanotechnology? And the answer to that is hopefully going to come out over the next year.
But we don't know right now.
We don't know.
Well, that's what makes the new technology all kinds of fun. We just don't know what's going to happen. Folks, this is the Food Chain. What do you think will happen when nanotechnology hits the food chain? Pick up your phone and join us, 831-479-1080. That's 479-1080 or 800-624-2665. This is the Food Chain. I am Michael Olson, and we're talking with Dr. Shane Journay, who is a CEO of Nanotechnology Toxicology Consulting and Training, and he can help you too understand nano. Well, you know, when you take something like gold and cut it in half until it becomes something as small as a nanoparticle, which is, and nanos are small, you know, a nanosecond is a 1/1,000,000,000th of a second. So when you take something like a Golden Eagle $20 piece and chop it down until it's a particle as small as a nano thing, so tiny that you can only see it in an electron microscope, its physical properties change. Instead of it being a solid, it could be a liquid. Instead of being a conductor, it could become a superconductor. Instead, it could become a catalyst, could make things happen instead of being inert. All kinds of interesting things happen when it becomes a nanoparticle. So that's what we're talking about. What can we use these nanoparticles for? We have Dr. Shane Journay with us today, and also we have Stuart. Stuart, welcome to the Food Chain. Glad you joined us, and you can join us out there too. Pick up your phones. We're at 800-624-2665 or 831-479-1080. Shane, what you got? Or, I'm sorry, Stuart, what do you have?
Oh, I was going to mention that nanotechnology is in use right now, coating the inside of plastic bottles and giving them all the good properties of glass. A lot of the soda pop manufacturers that have high-pressure gas inside and, you know, regular sea level pressures outside, there's an exchange of gas, which is bad, and your soda pop goes flat after 120 days. So by using this nanotechnology, by coating the inside of plastic, you give it all the properties of glass, you can have a bottle of soda pop that stays viable for years now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a lot of people looking at this right now. It's in use in the Arab countries where it's very, very hot, mm-hmm. and a lot of the soda pop companies are reducing the size of their product, but the surface area to liquid ratio is too high. But by coating the plastic in this nanotechnology and incorporating a screw cap with it, all of a sudden you have Coca-Cola. It'll stay viable for years.
Well, and thus saving Coca-Cola distributors a lot of money.
And everybody. I mean, you could take it with you and put it in your bomb shelter. You don't have to worry about changing it out every 90 days.
So, Stuart, let me ask you this. This seems like a great deal, but do you think there's any downside in coating the inside of a liquid bottle, something that we're going to be drinking, with something that we really don't know anything about?
Yeah, well, they've already tested it. You remember the polyvinyl chloride scare when people said certain kinds of plastic was leaching into the fluids mm-hmm. that you were ingesting, and they did that. Like, if you look around, you see the bottled water from, like, all these giant, you know, Crystal Geyser and Crystal Springs and everybody, and they have a triangle number on the bottom that is different, and these plastic bottles allegedly don't release any of those polyvinyl chlorides into the water, like...
Well, I'm not talking about the polyvinyl chlorides. I'm talking about the nanoparticles.
Right. Well, these nanoparticles, you know what? I guess it hasn't been in use long enough to find out if any populations are adversely affected.
Well, let's ask Shane. Has there been any studies at all about the toxic effects of nanoparticles on the human body, Shane?
Well, if we go back to things like air pollution, so if you're standing by the bus stop and there's the buses are swinging through, you're breathing in thousands of nanoparticles right there on the sidewalk. Happens to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is, these are very primitive nanoparticles. They're combustion-based. They're carbon. But they do have health effects in people that are at risk. So if you have asthma or heart disease, there's been many, many studies show that those harmful effects. But with all these new particles and new chemistries and new shapes, most of the studies have been done in mice, in rats, which are traditionally used for risk assessment. But there are more unknowns than knowns right now for the human body.
Yeah. Stuart, we don't know.
Right. I guess it would depend on what the liquid was inside and if it was reacting with the surface in a benign way or in a caustic way that would take something.
Well, that's, you know, you mentioned Coca-Cola, and I remember way back when my third grade teacher, you know, when a kid lost a tooth, the third grade teacher took that tooth and dropped it into a bottle of Coca-Cola.
Right, and the phosphoric acid would eat away at the tooth. Yeah.
You could just see it fizzing up. So, you know, we coat the inside of these plastic bottles with nanomaterials, and we put Coca-Cola in it, you know, which seems to, you know, decompose just about anything. You put lead in there, and it'll probably decompose the lead. So, I don't know.
Phosphoric acid is naughty stuff. I only drink sodas that have citric acid in it. I don't drink the dark sodas that have phosphorus in them. Phosphoric acid goes into your body, finds a calcium ion, and just runs out of your body with it. It can cause brittle bones to people who drink voluminous amounts of dark sodas.
Huh.
Another application of the nano-coating would be wine bottles. Wine is probably less caustic than phosphoric acid. And if you can imagine wine, the bottle weighs more than the liquid. And if you could put wine in plastic bottles, you would look at the diesel fuel savings alone, shipping wine, the breakage, the storage, all kinds of aspects. But people are so...
All you have to do is overcome the wine snobs to get that
exactly. Heck, it's even tough trying to get people to go from regular cork to synthetic cork, or
right.
go from the cork to screw cap.
So you don't seem to have any fear of
not at all
of coating the inside of plastic bottles with nanoparticles.
I would think that the breathing the toxic fumes, or I mean, look at us as primitive men. We lived with volcanoes and forest fires, and we're breathing smoke and stuff. And
sure.
A little bit of a possibility of a little bit of a nano getting into your body from a glass of wine or a soda pop seems pretty. You're going to die of something else before you could get enough nano in your system to kill you.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, will nanotechnology change how we feed ourselves? Do stay tuned. We will be right back. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Thank you. Right back. Well, barring a calamity of some kind, the future will consist of ever more people living in ever smaller parcels of land. It's almost like China, right? You can see that they don't have much wide open spaces left. They've been here a lot longer than we have. You know, in the past, technology has allowed us to develop that ever-increasing population, but we wonder if it will do so in the future. Today, we're looking at one of those technologies, the technology of the very small, the nano-small, which is very small indeed. And we're asking, will nanotechnology help feed our future? And we're asking Dr. Shane Journay, who is the CEO of Nanotechnology Toxicology Consulting and Training up in Nova Scotia. We're looking at the future, and we're asking, will nanotechnology change how we feed ourselves? It seems like it already is, Shane. Oops, let me push this button here.
Excuse me. So I'm already on the market. We've talked about possible increase in bioavailability with these nutraceuticals. And mm-hmm. one thing I was reading about, which is in development right now, is that the consumer might find interesting, is these custom, you know, tastes, sensations, and textures of food. That's another futuristic version of nanotech. So,
wait a minute. How does this work again?
Well, imagine if you could buy a clear liquid at the grocery store with nanoparticles in it, mm-hmm. and you decided you wanted a cola taste or a coffee taste. You could put it in your microwave for a certain amount of time or at a certain microwave frequency, which would activate the particles in that beverage to give you a specific taste.
Wow.
And this really just comes back to the engineering of the particles, and that's something that food companies are actually looking at. So it could give consumers actually more choice in what they eat.
And this also is, I would assume, to be very interesting to industrial corporations and companies because it's manageable, controllable, and ownable. You can patent your bottle of clear liquid, right?
Let's not forget one of the biggest drivers of the food industry is and always will be what the consumer will take, you know, or eat.
Yeah.
So if they can patent new tastes, smells, food packaging mechanisms, it's just wide open for the food industry.
So some time ago we did a show on Twinkies, and we talked about what's inside of a Twinkie with an author of a book of that subject. And it seemed like out of the 37 ingredients in Twinkies, only 4 of them were food, and the rest were related to shelf life and keeping the Twinkies holding together for a month on the shelf. It seems like the nanotechnology has the capacity to increase shelf life without having all that other stuff in there. Is that a possibility?
Absolutely. It's probably one of the most advanced areas right now in terms of nanotech would be food additives for preservation.
Wow. Yeah. Well, Dr. Shane Journay, how do people get in touch with you if they want to learn more?
Sure. They can go to our website, nanotoxicologyinc.com, where we can be reached. Or if they don't remember that, it's NTCNT. If you Google that, you should find us as well.
Okay, good, very much. And what do you think out there? Will nanotechnology feed our future? Thank you for tuning in. We hope to see you all next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here on the Food Chain. And remember, cheap food isn't. Thank you.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.